How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back in on The Fan. It's Spencer German with you as we have the opening night of All-Star Weekend in the NBA. Got plenty of Browns talk because there's always things to talk about with the Browns. The draft draws nearer and nearer. And to help us continue that conversation, we go on out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He covers the Cleveland Browns for the Akron Beacon Journal. Chris Easterling joining us on the show. Chris, how are you holding up, my friend? Good to have you on.
Well, it's good to be on with you, Spencer. On the eve of a frigid cold front coming through, of course I'm going to hear from you.
I got you in before it got extra cold. That was the goal here. So, you know, I've been talking in this during this first hour, Chris, about the fact that you know the Browns tend to not give much away, especially this time of year. And so the fact that we're hearing them link so much to Shedeur Sanders is kind of interesting to me. Is there almost too much smoke at this point linking the Browns to him to believe that that's actually going to be what they do come the draft at number two?
Oh, I think there's absolutely a lot of smoke to it. It's that time of year. Plus, it's such an obvious connection that you can't help but it happening. It's a combination of when we're talking about Deion Sanders' kid, and we're talking about a team that is desperately in need of a quarterback, that, you know, is desperately, you know, that has the number two pick, that's in a position to potentially get Shedeur. Shedeur has come out and said, my first visit is to Cleveland. Andrew Berry is actually, you know, so, yeah, I mean, I get where the smoke's coming from. Do I believe that they ultimately take Shedeur? Not necessarily. I mean, I think we're still going through. Again, like you say, it's early. It's a lot of smoke. But, you know, there's still a lot of ups and downs through this journey we're going to go through between now and when they're actually on the clock at the end of April.
If they don't take a quarterback at two, is the only other option, or should the only option, I guess, be trading out of that spot? Because to me, Chris, it feels like a wasted opportunity to stand pat and just take a player. If you can if you can trade back to three with the Giants or even six with the Raiders, for example, like I don't think the drop off is so severe from who you're going to get at two to who you're going to get at six that doesn't behoove you to do, because then you accumulate more picks to help bolster this roster both this year and next year. Am I wrong in thinking that way?
You're not wrong. Let me ask you two questions.
Sure.
Let me ask you. I need two pieces of information that we're not going to get until that moment that they're on the clock. One, what have you done with Myles Garrett? Mm. And two, who did the Tennessee Titans take at number, or whoever ends up taking the number one overall, making the number one overall pick? Who would say, and if that player is not Abdul Carter, do you take because assuming if Myles Garrett's not on your roster now, you have traded Myles Garrett.
Yeah.
You have picked up another first-round pick in this year's draft.
Yeah.
So you already have a second first-round pick. And you need to replace Myles Garrett because, you know, I love what I saw out of Alex Wright before he got hurt. I love what I love Obo. Isaiah McGuire took strides. You don't have that dude.
No.
If Abdul Carter is there, he has a chance to be that dude. He's not going to be Myles Garrett. I mean, I'm not saying that. But you can at least go into next year, at least you have put a tourniquet on that wound that is losing, you know, the best offensive player in franchise history.
See, so, that, go ahead. Sorry.
But I think to say definitively, if not quarterback, trade back. I just think there's a lot of variables that a lot of things that have to play out over the next couple of months before we can two and a half months before I think we could really, you know, say definitively that that should be option two after a quarterback.
Yeah, well, and you know, you talk about variables. Like the other variable could be if you trade back and it's just with the Giants. Well, then you gain even more first round picks, but you also guarantee yourself Abdul Carter just one pick later. So that could kind of play into your favor as well, where you could just, you know, kind of maximize every avenue of the situation. I guess, Chris, as we talk about quarterbacks and what the options are, sticking with the rookie class specifically, if they don't take one of two, who are some of the other names that you think would make sense for the Browns if they waited and took somebody, I don't know, later first round or early in the second round with the first pick of the second round that they have, or maybe even in the third round? Who are some guys that you have your eyes on if they go that route?
I mean, at that point, it's sort of what's your flavor?
Yeah.
You know, there are times I watch Jackson Dart and I kind of, you know, I squint and I see, yeah, this guy sits, you know, anybody.
But then you remember your Kentucky Wildcats beat Jackson Dart and you're like, I don't know about that.
Well, no, I mean, we played well against good teams. There's a lot of things he does well.
Yeah.
There's also, you know, Lane Kiffin, you know, he's a Lane Kiffin quarterback.
Yeah.
And there's just, you know, there's some things that, you know, you have questions about. There's Jalen Milroe, and you know, you're going to, I mean, Kalen DeBoer told me that, you know, probably the best system for him to succeed is something along the lines of what the Ravens do with Lamar.
Mm.
You know, I mean, Tyler Shough from, or however you pronounce his last name, from Louisville. But, I mean, is that Brandon Weeden 2.0? I guess you could probably sell that, well, he's played a lot of football, he's older, you can put him in the lineup quicker because of that maturation and everything. I mean, heck, Will Howard. I mean, you know, but then, you know, the questions are, I mean, I got to ask, why was Kansas State so willing to get rid of, you know, I mean, Kansas State for multiple years wanted to move on from Will Howard. Was it just that he was surrounded by the best collection of skill talent
he'll
probably ever have around him, even when he gets to the pros at Ohio State? I mean, it just, I don't know if I have that one guy outside of the first round that that at this point in time I'm like 100%, and that's the problem with this draft class. It's like there's just not that guy, even amongst the Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders, that you just go, oh, this is, if you're saying, oh, this is an absolute, I'm just going to question you know what you're thinking.
So along those lines, in regards to the quarterback, what about the veteran options? Is there anybody that stands out as like this is the guy that can be your Joe Flacco bridge for a year that maybe gets you to 11 wins? Because we know these options, none of them are great, but is there anybody that kind of stands out as like the leader of the clubhouse for you?
Amongst the free agents, no. Amongst the free agents, I mean, I guess – Sam Darnold just seems like he'll come with such a price tag.
Yeah.
That I just wonder. I'll be honest, I just don't want to deal with the Aaron Rodgers stuff.
I've been saying, Chris, there's no bad ideas when it comes to, like, who should the Browns quarterback be next year? But the one bad idea is Aaron Rodgers. You can't invite all that into your locker room. You just can't do it.
I was talking to somebody, and look, this is a guy who, I mean, it's going to be difficult to get him out because even though I think the franchise he's currently with wants to get rid of him because of money issues.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of – but then again, you know, I just can't quit Derek Carr, sort of. At least it's a pro.
Yeah.
But here's the thing is I think you raise your floor. And I'm not saying you're going to raise it up to a playoff contender or even to like seven wins, but just getting a competent quarterback in the room, a guy that's going, you know, that's going to be a leader, that's just at least going to play competent football for you for the better part of a season, is going to raise your floor. So at that point, you know, I don't know. I mean, again, I'm curious to see. Don't you kick the tires on Matthew Stafford?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to, right? Like, if he's available, you got to call.
I mean, if he's available, don't you have to at least call and see what's the price? What are you looking at? I mean, you have to find something to at least stabilize that position beyond just whatever. And you're going to at least take one quarterback in this draft. And with this many, you're going to have 12 picks. Take two. What's the worst that can happen? You cut one? Take two. You have to find an answer at that position. Otherwise, I mean, you're just spinning in circles.
Chris Easterling of the Akron Beacon Journal joining us on the show. And he had a piece last week during Super Bowl week where Nick Chubb spoke and actually talked about his future. Chris, based on where things are right now and the comments he made last week, is Nick Chubb back with the Browns next season?
I don't know, because I don't know if it's Nick Chubb's decision. Mm. I think Nick Chubb would, in a perfect world, like to come back with the Browns. I mean, that's what he said. He's like, look, they drafted me. I played 7 years there. Of course I want to come back to Cleveland. But he also said, look, I've never gone through this. I'd like to get it done sooner rather than later, but it's not really my time. You know, he also kind of, acknowledged, it's not my – that I'm not controlling the timeline necessarily. And so, I mean, I think that's something that I don't know if – if we have an answer to that until April, really. I mean, I think it's something that – because I think he's going to want to, see what the market – what the market shows for him. If there's another team out there that he can – that maybe gives him a little better deal. But, I think this drags out a little bit longer than some people than some people might expect.
As a follow-up, because you mentioned, waiting to see maybe what he gets from other teams, do you think he would accept like a lower pay or a pay cut, if you will, from the Browns just because he loves it here and wants to be here over somebody who might be paying more, offering more? I don't think he's getting he's not getting like a massive payday, I don't think, anyway. But if it's like, I don't know, $1 million, maybe $2 million off, like would he accept the deal from the Browns at a little bit of a lower rate because he wants to be in Cleveland over, the extra money somewhere else?
If it's a couple million dollars, I'd probably take the couple million dollars. Mm. Because I think what the Browns are going to try to do, it's going to be incentivated. And if he can get, guaranteed dollars or, if he can get more dollars up front and it not be relying on, him coming back now off of his second major knee injury plus, a broken foot, which, he told me, his foot was fine. He was doing good. I'm sure it won't be long before we see him, bench pressing, Ford pickups and whatever. But it's just so hard to say. I don't want to guess.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I'd have to see the deals. I mean, hypothetically, maybe. But again, if another team is offering him more money, and we're talking in, seven figures difference, I would understand him taking the other deal because I believe the Browns are going to draft a running back, and I believe they're going to want to start getting that, making that running back into their number one running back.
Final thing, Chris, we got a minute left here. Travis Hunter as a prospect, he's been linked to the Browns a couple times in some mock drafts and different things. Do you think he...
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
He's better suited to be a cornerback in the NFL or a wide receiver?
I don't, boy, I've heard cornerback, I've heard wide receiver. I just know, and I know we've talked to our colleague, a good friend Dan Lobby, is it, whatever you think of him as his primary position, you better have a plan to use him in the other package, or an idea of how you're going to use him at the other position as well, because he's too talented of a player to not utilize him fully. So I know he's listed as a DB at for the purposes of the combine. But my guess is that plenty of teams are going to look at him on both sides of the ball, and then at that point, get creative, figure out a way to maximize this guy's playmaking ability. Because, and if it hurts certain people's feelings, thinking of a couple of cornerbacks and it playing in Northeast Ohio, who aren't Pro Bowlers, then get better, because he's a special talent.
Chris Easterling, you can follow him on X at CEasterlingABJ. He had that great piece talking to Nick Chubb last week, and he'll have plenty more coverage throughout the offseason for you over there. He does a tremendous job, and Chris, as always, we appreciate your time. I'll let you go get bundled up for the snowstorm that's coming through.
Good talking to you, Spencer.
Travis Hunter is an interesting prospect to me for all the reasons that Chris Easterling just laid out. I just don't know, I don't know where he fits. Because I think at the morning show, I was talking about this a little bit, he wouldn't be the number one wide receiver in this class. He probably wouldn't be the number one corner in this class. But what makes him valuable is that he can play both positions. And so I think Chris is right in quoting Dan Lobby the way he did, in believing that whatever position you want him to play, you got to have some reason to let him play the other side of the ball as well. Like at least in spurts, even though that's abnormal for the NFL, because his pure value is off of the fact that he can play both positions. I'm not saying he's not going to be great the next level. I'm not saying he can't do the two-way thing. I'm not saying that he can't master one of them. But I just, I don't know that I think he's, wide receiver one or corner one, just based off of what I've seen in his game and watched in his game, to believe that he should just classify as one. I know he's kind of doing that at the combine by going in as a corner, but I don't know. It's an interesting setup for him, and we just got to figure out, where he fits, I guess, and if the Browns actually will want him. Let's go to the phones. Todd, what's going on, Todd?
Yo, Spencer. So Travis Hunter is the single most dangerous type of cornerback that exists. He has the hands of a receiver, and that's the truth.
That is true. I would hope he could actually catch the ball, unlike some of these other corners.
No doubt, man, he could catch the ball. You see, they keeping records of bat downs now, which is good. He's going to get a lot of those too, but he's going to snatch him and be on his way out the air. He has a very good sense of awareness. So, no, I don't think the best thing about him is that he could play both ways, as much as I believe that the best thing about him is his sense of awareness, and his hands are so good that he's just dangerous at corner. I don't know that he's the best corner coming out, though. I got mixed feelings about that, man.
So who do you think is the best? Because I would say Will Johnson.
That's the name I was about to throw out there. I think that's the best. He has hands of a receiver too, but I don't think he has the same I don't think he has the same sense of awareness that Johnson has overall. I mean, not Johnson, that Travis has overall. So I'm feeling like you put some pounds on Hunter. He looked like Chris Carter as a receiver. If you have any memory, well, you may not. If you look at some old video of Chris Carter playing, he looked like put a few more pounds on him. That's Chris Carter as a receiver for sure. So I don't want the Browns to get him because they need more, though. So as much as it's good to talk about it, it ain't so good to talk about him as a Cleveland Brown. Why do you think Johnson is better?
I mean, just I think just like based off of his game, like he has mastered the position. I think he clearly is special, like because he specializes in it. I've watched the tape. Like he can be that ball hawk type of guy. He can be a guy that defends a guy in man coverage and like really disrupt things. I'm not saying Travis Hunter can't do those things. I just think like I've seen more in his game than I have from Hunter to believe that like he should be consensusly the number one corner, which he is.
I
do think Hunter, like I said, maybe him specifying as one, and he pours all his energy into that one thing. Like that's the thing with Hunter. It's kind of like LeBron, where you see the talents there. Like you know LeBron could be successful in the NFL if he wanted to play football. I know Travis Hunter can be great at either one if he puts his mind to it, where he just focuses on one. I just don't know that like we have the evidence right now to believe like he's the best in this class at either of those positions. But I think he's probably a little bit better corner from my estimation than he is a receiver.
Do you believe Johnson's been better tested over his college career because of his competition?
Yeah, I think that's part of it too. You know, playing in the Big Ten, going up against some of those Ohio State teams and the receivers. I know he didn't play this year. He was out for that game. But, like, yeah, I think the competition level's obviously been different as well, and that probably plays a role, too.
You going to be on the air Sunday?
I will be. I think it's Daryl and I co-hosting together.
I'd like you to take a look at some old Chris Carter video and tell me if you could see Travis Hunter and him with some more pounds on him at receiver.
I haven't watched Chris Carter highlights in a while, so I will try to do that tomorrow.
They're about the same height, and I think the same vertical.
All right.
Johnson has a better vertical than both of them, just so you know.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, Todd, appreciate you as always, my man. Let's go back out. Abner, what's up, Abner?
Hey, man, how you doing? Beautiful,
yeah? Okay. Yeah, until this storm rolls in, but yeah.
It's all right. I like snow because it's not as muddy, and my dogs don't make it big of a mess. They're big Rottweilers, right? But that's besides the point. Listen, I need you to settle this for me, okay, man? I'm arguing with my friend. I think a few things, all right? It's going to be a long point, but I'm going to shorten it down. I think the Browns need to stop drafting quarterbacks because it doesn't work out for them. We're not going to win with a franchise quarterback. We're going to have to be a team that wins with a average or above average quarterback, a great team. So stop wasting all these picks and shooting yourself in the foot over and over and over again because it's not going to work out. We have so much data that supports that. And then another thing that I want you to answer because you're the professional here. I told my buddies that Johnny Manziel is one of the worst picks. I'm saying top five worst picks for the Browns in their franchise history, that he is one of the worst, considering what he was, where we drafted him at 22, and how bad he was. He only played two seasons and no one wanted him. And considering Skip Bayless said he was going to be even bigger than LeBron, how much of a bust he was. And I said he is a top five worst pick for the Browns in Browns franchise history. I want you to answer that, whether you agree or disagree and why. I leave you with that, all right?
All right, Abner, yeah, I appreciate the call. So, what you said at the end about Johnny Manziel, like, you'd be hard-pressed not to say he's a top five worst pick of all time. I mean, you could put Barcavius Mingo up there. You could put maybe Courtney Brown because it just didn't work out with all his injuries. I'm trying to think who else. There's been so many bad ones. I mean, the list goes on and on, right?
Who was the other guy they took in that Manziel draft? Unless you already named him.
No. I know exactly who you're thinking of, and I'm trying to remember the name, too, because it was a corner.
Yeah,
Justin Gilbert.
Yeah, he was a bust,
terrible.
Too, correct?
He was terrible. Yeah, two busts that you took in. Those guys are both first-rounders, and they both stunk. How about that? Yeah? There's a long list of players that were busts that this team invested in over the years, and Manziel has to be top five. So I'd agree with you there. What I did think was a little bit crazy from Abner talking, though, was the fact that he said that he's now just reserved to, you just don't waste picks on quarterbacks anymore. I mean, that can't possibly be the philosophy of this team. You don't, like, I know that we get caught up in the history of it, and you bring up people like Johnny Manziel, and you're like, this team's just never going to get a quarterback through the draft, so just stop trying. But, like, Pat, previous history, previous decisions have no impact on, like, the future direction of this franchise in terms of, like, just because you haven't hit a quarterback before doesn't mean you'll never get one. You still have to keep taking the bites at the apple. You still have to keep trying to get that position right, because if you don't, you're just going to be bobbing in mediocrity for years to come. Like, that I don't subscribe to. You can't be afraid to take a quarterback just because previous Browns regimes have failed at doing so. We'll get to more of your calls here on the other side. Also, when we get back, a second Cavs title would mean more than the first. I'll explain why when we get back in about 6 minutes here on The Fan. We got Hot Take Friday in 20 minutes. One of us might have a hot take about this very song. Maybe. Who knows? We might actually share the take. We'll see. You're like, no, I'm taking that for me.
This is my take.
I said it first, for what it's worth. Because I told you to take it as a take.
But it was my take. Don't take my take.
Now we're fighting over takes.
How dare you, Spencer Man, German?
Love is really in the air on this Valentine's Day, huh? You gotta stop fighting, man. It's Freebird. It's classic.
You don't fight during Freebird. Just turn back up.
You don't fight during Freebird, okay?
Hey, no fighting on Freebird. We made this rule.
All love. Ken and Anthony Lima bring you the off-the-air conversations on the air every Tuesday and Thursday at 10:15 with the emerging podcast Seamless and Live on the 92.3 The Fan Extra channel in the Odyssey app and at 92.3thefan.com. It's presented by Extend Technologies, and check out every single archived episode as well. Real quick here, James has been on hold. He has a Twitter handle recommendation. James, what you got?
Hey, I got a good one for you, Mr. No-Nonspence.
No-Nonspence. I'm writing that one down.
Mr. No-Nonspence.
Mr. No-Nonspence. All right, James. I appreciate you dropping that one, and I appreciate you waiting as long as you did to share it. That's a good one. So the most creative one so far is definitely the 216 pence, none the richer. That one's good. But I like Mr. No-Nonspence. I kind of just like No-Nonspence, too. That one's a little bit shorter, a little bit easier, less syllables. It is not lost on me that the Cavs winning the championship in 2016 was like the pinnacle of Cleveland sports for many, a truly memorable and unforgettable scene, moment, sports experience. People cried, people wept, they hugged each other in the streets. It was the end of the 52-year drought. It was all these different things. I get all that. It's not lost on me. And so there is some level of, like, memory that is going to live on from that moment and those you know, that series, that Cavs Warriors series, that will always, you know, be iconic and mean so much to people. So I'm not trying to downplay that. But a second championship, and you got to let me explain where I'm coming from with this, would mean more than the first for the Cleveland Cavaliers. And here's the reason why. What has this organization been over the course of its history other than the LeBron era? All anybody ever references with the Cavaliers is like, oh yeah, LeBron, he won you that championship. LeBron, you know, like that's your history. That's what you got. But other than that, and a lot of people look at it as like, yeah, LeBron brought you that title. You know, you guys should be thankful to LeBron for bringing you that title on the outside looking in. And I'm not saying we shouldn't be thankful to LeBron. I appreciate that LeBron delivered on his promise, came back. I love LeBron. And the fact that he came through is, you know, he lives on in infamy because the way that series played out, the way that he did that, you know, he's legendary status in this town forever. Never has to buy a drink, all those different things. Like, LeBron is an icon in Cleveland sports forever. I'm not denying that either. But all anybody talks about with this organization is losing to Jordan via the shot and LeBron James and him bringing a title here. A second championship in this town with different players, parts and pieces, a different star in Donovan Mitchell. I mean, that legitimizes the franchise. That makes it more about like, okay, this wasn't just like a one-off cosmic, you know, stars aligning where you get the superstar player who was born in the area, born in Northeast Ohio, you know, generational talent that we've never seen before in the history of the NBA. And he happens to be from Akron. And he comes in and he wins you a title. That might be the better story because, you know, there's the hometown hero vibes and there's the returning from his time in Miami after he spurned the city on live TV and all that. Like, that stuff is all very true. It can be the better story. It can be the first title after that ended the drought, and so it meant a lot to people in that moment. But a second title would legitimize this franchise as not just being these two moments in time where in the 90s you just couldn't get past Jordan and he had one iconic moment against you to prove it. And yeah, LeBron James was born here and he led you to a title. I mean, this franchise has been trying for years to get out from LeBron's shadow. Dan Gilbert has always wanted desperately to make this team keep this team in contention and build a contending team that wasn't just built on the back and the coattails of LeBron James. And so that's why if they were to win a title this year or in the next couple years with this group, like, it shows how far you've come. Cleveland doesn't just stay a punchline anymore where it's like, oh, yeah, LeBron. Other than that, what have the Cavs been? Like, oh, yeah, you got lucky that one time because you had the best player ever. That doesn't usually happen. Like, no, you win a title with this team. It's like, okay, you have an owner who's learned how to do things the right way and invested in the team the right way. He put the right people in power for once. He didn't just bail on a GM after his first contract. He kept them around, and that GM rewarded him by building another championship caliber team, pulling all the right strings to assemble this roster, and piecing it together piece by piece and bit by bit to get you back into contention, maybe even sooner than people thought you could. Because you're not that far removed from the LeBron era. And like the first time around, you were trying to build this team through the draft and it didn't really go all that great. You got Kyrie out of it, but the team was still pretty bad. You know, with this iteration, you got Darius Garland, you got Evan Mobley. You were starting to make some progress. You made a few trades, and then it got you Donovan Mitchell, and all bets were off. But that's my larger point here, is I understand that there's memories from that night here in town that will never be forgotten, and the emotions of it all will carry so much weight for years to come. But in terms of like what a second title does for this franchise and what a second title does in the landscape of the NBA, like you're not just like a one-time champion who had your one little run there and it was all fun and games. No, you are a multi champion now. You are a legitimate franchise that has proven that like, no, we know how to do this the right way. We know how to build teams that can win titles. We are a destination that can accomplish that. Like, who would have thought Donovan Mitchell, one of the stars of the league, would come to Cleveland and be comfortable enough and enjoy it here enough that he would sign an extension? That type of stuff doesn't happen in the NBA. And that's another reason why a second title would matter. It sets the tone for like, you know what? LA's nice. Boston's nice. New York is nice. But you can come to Cleveland, modest town, blue-collar city. We work hard. We're gritty. Yeah, the weather, it can stink at times. But Donovan Mitchell came here. He said, I like the cold. I don't mind. You can have a beer after 11 o'clock, unlike Donovan Mitchell could in Utah. Like, it proves that And it kind of continues what we have seen. Because, I mean, you've had some champions recently. The Bucks, for example. The Nuggets. Like, it further proves the narrative that, like, you can be a star or a superstar in this league anywhere. And there's other organizations that know how to actually team build and have legitimate, like a legitimate process they go through to stay relevant and to chase titles. And the Cavs can be one of those teams. To me, a second title makes you like a have rather than a have not. One can be written off as whatever people want to write it off as. You have LeBron. It's a rare thing that you get a star like that, a generational talent like that, who's from the area and has this deep passion to deliver you a title the way he did. Like, that's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. This is like, you built this team the way other great teams were built, through the draft, and then added pieces along the way, and now you're a title contender. And the thing is, too, if you win one, like, if they were to win it this year, who's to say they can't win it again in the years ahead? Because this roster that Kobe Altman's now assembled is going to largely be the roster that you see running the show here for years to come. It's your core four plus probably a DeAndre Hunter. Like, there's the only way you can really add or tweak from here is breaking up the core four. But if it works and you win a championship, who's breaking up the core four then? Like, this it legitimizes the franchise and it puts you in a position where you can become a dynasty. And once you become a dynasty in this league, like, that's different than just, you know, being sort of a footnote in the NBA with one title to your name. No, that's like, you look back on an era and remember that team dominated basketball. That's what another title could sort of open up here. That's what another title would mean. And so, no, from a local perspective, the emotions of a second title probably don't trump that night when there were so many tears shed and so many memorable stories told and, you know, parents leaning on their kids with the camera rolling, like, off your cell phone, all those things. But on a larger scale, a second title would mean so much more to this franchise than even the first one did, because it cements that they are a legitimate team in this league, a legitimate franchise in this league. They're not just this one-off title run. It comes with respect. And frankly, it further proves, as I talked about last week, that the Cavs are the best run organization in this city. They will have accomplished not once, but twice what the other two teams in town haven't done since the 60s. That was the last time the Browns won, and before was the Super Bowl, obviously. And the Guardians / Indians, even before that. So hopefully that makes sense, because I do think, like, there is a legitimacy that comes and a respect factor that comes with winning a second title, that the first one was cool and it had all those vibes and the great stories and people understood it. But on a larger national scale, maybe I know people say they don't care about the national narratives, whatever, but people like Dan Gilbert do. And on a national scale, like, winning a second one, that brings a different level of respect to this organization than what even the first one with LeBron brings. 216-474-0092. Do you get what I'm saying? Does it make sense? And do you agree? You can disagree. It's fine. I'm not going to be mad at you. I will be mad at you, though, if you don't remember that number, 216-474-0092, and call in next segment, because it is a staple whenever I host this very show on 92.3 The Fan that we do a segment we like to call Hot Take Friday. We will bring it to you coming up next in about 5 minutes from now. Keep it locked. Remember the phone number. Remember my Twitter handle, @SpenceCito_. You can send them there as well. It's a Hot Take Friday coming up next on The Fan.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on
video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.